Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Leona Brando. Blog Talk Radio / Shedding Light. I am with New Vision Organization and also the host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we are going to have a guest on our show who has a story to tell about the horrific abuses that go on in the prisons. She not only had to endure the harshest of punishment, but she also witnessed the loss of many prisoners she ultimately befriended while spending 14 hard years in a federal prison for a robbery she was alleged to have committed. Laura will tell her story, and we hope that the awareness will inspire the audience around the country to help shed light on these abuses and promote changes in the penal system, whether state or federal. Prisoners are human, they're human beings regardless of their offenses. No one is born bad, and if they fall, it's up to all of us to ensure that they are rehabilitated and ultimately released to a receptive community who can say they helped to restore another human being. Prisoners should not be stereotyped, as each individual has their own story to tell. Many prisoners were victims themselves prior to hitting stumbling blocks and snares of others, causing them to fail. Our guest this morning, Laura Wetzel, will tell about her bringing up, the things that she went through as a child, the struggles that she went through growing, and what ultimately brought her to a federal prison to serve these 14 hard years. Laura is on the air with us now, and she will tell her story. Laura?
Yes, good morning, sister.
How are you? I want to thank you for being on the show with us, and I want you to tell your story because it is heart-wrenching to know that you went through not only while incarcerated, but what you went through years before leading up to this situation. So if you will, please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and tell them some of the sufferings that you had to endure.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to be on your show this morning. Just to share a little bit, I was adopted at 18 months by a Caucasian family in rural Pennsylvania. I'm now a 48-year-old African-American female, and growing up, I was subject to physical, sexual, verbal, emotional abuse. I only went to third grade because they did not want colored people in school. I wasn't accepted. I wasn't able to learn. They ultimately put me in state homes where I was abused sexually and physically. And I started drinking at the age of 9. My social skills were not very well developed. I just had a lot of problems due to my environment. Literally, grown people would be throwing rocks at me, kicking me, beating me. It ultimately led me being in abusive relationships, drinking, doing drugs throughout my whole entire life, marrying a man that was involved with drugs and not really knowing him. And I ended up getting charged with bank robbery back in 2002 with my husband, but I stayed in the vehicle and they charged me just like I ran in the bank. I did 8 months in federal prison. I came out for a year and I reoffended, and I ultimately ran in a bank and did my own bank robbery. I have had a life filled with abuse, neglect, low self-esteem, mental health issues, drinking, drugs, just letting people abuse me. When I got sentenced to 14 years, 1 month for being a career offender, converted, it was 169 months. I never expected to go to federal prison and endure the type of abuse that I did, and along with my peers. The judge said I had to be rehabilitated, that I could not live in society. So I went to prison, and the programs that they say they have to help rehabilitate you, they do not. I quickly became a target to the officers, where they would just cuss you out for no reason. I didn't take that abuse very well. They would constantly throw me in special housing confinement. I didn't take that very well. I ultimately, in 2008, had a physician assistant that was assigned to me jump up and down on my stomach, rupture my bladder, until an officer commanded him 3 times to get off of me, and the officer had to physically grab the man off of me. I've been kicked in my side with steel toes. I've been picked up and used as a battering ram by the officers where my head was split open. I have shackle marks on my ankles from the shackles being on for days and being too tight and they were unable to get them off. I have shackle marks on my wrists from them having to cut them off as well. I've been flash bombed and grenaded just a few months back. I have an 8x8 scar on my right thigh and on my neck from that. There was times when I was in special housing and I did not have food to eat and I would go to bed crying because I was hungry. They would not give me blankets. Sometimes they wouldn't give me clothes or a mattress and I would be laying on a concrete slab. There was plenty of roaches, ants, mice that would crawl all over you. They would literally have us laying in other people's feces, blood, and urine. I literally was a target because I spoke the truth and I had Jesus. The officers basically would just, because I would talk back to them, they would just take it out on me. I did a year straight in special housing with a lieutenant hold. So what that meant was they could not open my cell door without a lieutenant present. And they ultimately took me outside that year 5 times. I was white as a ghost, bruises all up and down my system. They denied me my oxygen machine for a year. I had no vitamin D in my system, which resulted in my thinking being off, not being able to sleep. They had to give me 50,000 units of a vitamin D that had to be specially approved. The second time, I did 14 months straight in confinement for no reason. The Federal Bureau of Prisons is regulated by the Department of Justice, the Office of Inspector General, and the Office of Internal Affairs, ACA accreditation, and the regional offices. What that means is they have standards and conditions that they have to abide by. And they do not, the federal agencies that regulate the Bureau of Prisons do not hold them accountable. I've had too many peers pass away for simple medical neglect. In 2007, I was on life support while in Texas at the prison, and they decided they did not want to pay the cost for my life support. So they ultimately pulled my plug for the cost without an advance directive, which led to the doctor telling the prison that he was sorry, but after they pulled the plug, I showed signs of life and he had to plug me back in. I have a scar on my neck from where I had a trach and behind that incident. There was just so much abuse, and I would write them up to Congress. I would write them up to the Obama administration. And his administration was the only one that would respond to my letters. And they would acknowledge my abuse of my overseers, and they would accept the letters that the prison would send them. But ultimately, the prison was told that they couldn't keep me in special housing confinement like that, and the prison did whatever they wanted to do anyway. The Office of Inspector...
When you contacted the government for help, did they respond in a positive way? You say that they did respond, but they accepted the letters from the prison officials who probably
yes.
stated totally different?
Yes, totally. The first letter that the Obama administration staff sent to the prison, I had 27 documents that actually refuted their statement and their story about what happened. And whoever, I'm sure it wasn't Obama himself, but whoever in his administration was getting my letters was accepting the information from the prison.
And this happens a lot with prisoners. And also, when a lot of prisoners have written to the governors for help, And what I understand from prisoners is that the governor, the staff from the governor's office, usually takes their complaint and sends it right back to the prison, to the very people that the prisoners are reporting. So does that happen, or did that happen when you were incarcerated in the federal prison?
Oh, most definitely.
So what's happening then really is that you were writing for help, and the people that were responding to you were contacting or sending the information back to the people that you were reporting, and they were giving false information, and the government officials or whoever it was that you were writing to was accepting the official's version of it and not yours.
Exactly. And what would happen with that is the officials, meaning the warden, the associate warden, and his executive staff, would literally retaliate. They would come at me and scream and tell me to stop writing the president, stop writing Congress. They would tell me to stop doing administrative remedies. It was just awful because every letter that I would write or every write-up that I would do, the prison would have to answer for it. So it made my environment and my living situation unsafe for me. And there were so many peers that would come up to me that didn't speak English, didn't know me, but would say thank you or kiss me on my forehead. Or they would tell me, we don't have a voice like you. We're glad that you're doing this, but we're sorry for what they're doing to you. For instance, back in 16, they kicked me out of food service for 7 weeks, would not allow me to go to food service, but wouldn't provide any other means of food for me. So for 7 weeks, my peers literally fed me because they would not let me in food service to eat.
And this is why, Laura, I thank you so much for sharing this information, because what you went through is what so many others have gone through. And like as you say, they don't have a voice. So you're really being their voice for them. And I want to let the audience know as well that Laura is working on a book that she's going to be writing about her life. And at that point in time, I would suggest when the time comes, we'd like to have Laura back on with us to actually talk more about her situation and in the book. But right now, Laura, you mentioned that you lost a lot of friends while incarcerated that you had befriended, that you became friends with, that have died. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Well, for example, one of my friends, Miss Pam, she was literally just constipated 3-4 days, and by the fourth day, she died from a bowel obstruction, something simple they could have gave her a laxative for. Another lady, Miss Taylor, they cut off the wrong leg. She was Haitian, and they went back, and then they had to cut off the right leg, which ultimately led to her death. Another lady, Linda, young girl, 4'11", about 95 pounds. They choked her. The autopsy report showed that she was in a chokehold, and they got away with that. I mean, there was so much abuse and neglect in the medical center for the federal inmates, that when you would go to the local hospitals or the specialist, the first thing they would tell you is, what is the prison doing to you? Why are you coming out like this? Why is your health like this? I literally right now have 28 active chronic conditions, and I've been in the Federal Bureau of Prisons for 14 years. They made me serve all of my time but 28 days. I have an aneurysm from the beatings that I took while in the medical center in Fort Worth, Texas. They literally kicked me in my side, threw me into bookcases, picked me up, used my head as a battering ram, and then the physician assistant jumping up and down on me. So the vascular surgeon asked me, what happened to you after November of 2004? Because I have your free world records that show you did not have an aneurysm. And I said, the beatings from the prison guard and the physician assistant. So what happened is I have this trauma-induced aneurysm that sits on my pancreas from where they kicked me with their steel toes, and I have pancreatic masses that we cannot do a biopsy because every time they put me under, they're going to rupture my aneurysm. So I couldn't tell you if I have cancer or not. It ultimately happened from the beatings. simple things like going to the dentist 2 weeks ago. I was told he can't pull my teeth because I was punched in my jaw by an officer September of 2016, and now I have an artery aneurysm in my lower left jaw from the male officer punching me in my face, all because I wanted to sign myself out of the local hospital. I watched a lot of my peers die for simple stuff. Families don't know. The nation doesn't even know what happens to you in federal prison. The cameras will always go into state prison, but if you think about it, sister, you never see cameras going into the federal system. There's no reason why I should have been crying because I was hungry, crying because I was cold. There's no reason why I should not have been fed, why I should not have had medications, and why my health is this bad. And the federal agencies and officials that regulate it, including the Department of Justice, needs to be held accountable for all these lives lost. I made it out, but I made it out by the grace of God and through the struggle. If I wouldn't have been such a fighter, and my life and how I grew up, that really ingrained me to want to make it and stay alive in the federal system. Ultimately, the abuse that I suffered as a child helped me to endure it as an adult in federal prison. Some of these stories that you'll hear is just unbelievable. You have families all over the United States and other countries that lost loved ones in federal prison and does not know that it's because of their own neglect and abuse.
Sorry about that. But you know what? The thing is, it does happen in prisons and state prisons as well. But federal prisons and state prisons, what they need to do is they need to allow the media to go into these facilities. And that's the one thing a journalist, a reporter had told me one time, that they the prison, they do not allow the media to go in unless it's certain circumstances. But these things need to be reported. They need to be exposed. The things that you went through, not only growing up, but to especially in prisons when it's supposed to be correcting, but not corruption. It's not supposed to be total abuses like that. As far as the respiratory problems that you have too, I find that other prisoners have had this problem where they have coughs, they have respiratory problems because they are confined a lot of times in solitary confinement, in restrictive blocks where they are not getting the air, they're not getting the fresh air or any kind of air for that matter, and they have these awful coughs. I noticed that a lot of times when they're confined all the time in solitary or on restrictive blocks, not allowed to leave for anything, and I can tell in your voice too the respiratory problems that you do have. The reason sharing this story is good because a lot of people around the country, a lot of people think that prisoners have it made, you know, that they have the luxury of eating good food and they have the luxury of all the medical care, and taxpayers are complaining about paying their expenses. What taxpayers don't realize is that most prisoners, before going to prison, were working. Most of them were putting their tax dollars into the system as well. So it's not just the taxpayers that are on the outside, but a lot of them that were on the inside. So the things that they're getting, the food and all of these things that they're getting, a lot of times the employees are getting the good food and they're giving the prisoners.
Yes.
You probably can understand this, and I'd like you to speak a bit about the food too. How they do feed, and if the prisoners are getting fed well.
Well, I will touch back on the respiratory problems first. A lot of the prisons were built in 1930s, 1940s, so there's mold and asbestos everywhere. So a lot of people have respiratory problems from the mold and the asbestos. The prison in Florida, Tallahassee, 1932. So there's mold and asbestos, and some of the buildings are actually condemned and shut down because of the mold. And then Danbury, Connecticut, when they took the women out of the FCI, same thing. The buildings are from the 30s, lots of mold, asbestos, things like that. And actually some of the officers have left federal prison and have sued because they've gone blind from working in the prisons, respiratory problems, and such. Then, as far as you're right, there's a lot of good people in prison, and some people just got caught up. Or, I mean, really, federal, they can pick up any kind of charge. If the state drops a case, the feds can just pick it up because they want to. So there's people in prison with charges like ghost dope, meaning they didn't get caught with anything. Somebody just said they did, and they charged them. And then as far as the food, oh, you're absolutely right. The guards get paid. Where the guards eat, they're supposed to pay for their meals, and they get real food. We get food where they will drop our meat on the floor and pick it up and put it in a kettle. There's boxes of meat that comes in that will say, literally, not for human consumption, and we're eating it. There was times when there was maggots in the soup, and the warden in Texas, in Carswell, told the kitchen worker, can I please have the maggot? There's rodents, there's mice, there's roaches in your food. One time I was in special confinement, and all of the food trays had weevils in the rice and roaches, so they had to give us all bag lunches. The food is not healthy. It's not good for you. A lot of people have money, and they can shop commissary, which means you're literally eating processed foods. I'm a diabetic. I take 3 different insulins. They really don't have, they say they have diabetic diets or heart healthy, but they do not. And as far as the medical, you're absolutely right. We have to pay co-pays in prison. But here's the thing. They'll send you to a specialist, and the specialist will say you need this medicine or you need this surgery. But then you go back to the prison, and the prison will say, no, we're not going to give you that medicine or the surgery. And then you'll say, well, why did you send us? Well, because we just wanted to get the opinion. So the prison ultimately has the last say-so. And if you have surgery or...
Exactly. I wanted to bring that up, too, because a lot of times they are contracted with providers that work for them, but not they're not with the prison, the Department of Corrections, or the federal prison penal system. But I've noticed a lot of these providers, when they diagnose a prisoner, when they recommend that the prisoner have a certain medical device or surgery or whatever it might be, as you say, they override what the medical providers are saying. And the medical providers cannot do anything about it, which is not right, because medical providers are hired for that specific reason.
Well, you know what they ultimately end up doing is the specialist will say, when my contract is finished, I'm done. I'm not going to deal with the Federal Bureau of Prisons because their job is to save a life, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons doesn't have that same goal or mission. Because here's the thing, in the United States Constitution, it says our society places value on human life, but the Federal Bureau of Prisons does not. If it was left up to them, I would have never made it out. Because, of course, they pulled my life support plug without the advance directive. And at times, the abuse was so bad that I didn't think I wanted to make it out on my own and would try to take my life. I never thought that I would be under the federal government and go to prison for rehabilitation and get a whole battle zone. My body is filled with scars that money might physically take them away, but I'm never going to be able to forget what I endured and to see the peers that I love, how they died and didn't make it home, and their families have no clue. This isn't something that's just going to leave me. My purpose is to bring awareness and light to the nation and to other countries, because there's people in federal prison from all over. And my desire and my goal is to go to Congress and talk to special counsel and say, hey, look, I have these documents, I have these letters. Y'all knew the abuse, including my own judge, but you all did nothing to help me. And I think there needs to be awareness, because I'm in prison because I did a crime, but our overseers are committing crimes. We had a warden in Danbury. She was on her third DUI, And it was in the paper, and at first we kind of thought it was cool. Hey, you know, we got a warden who's driving drunk all the time. But that wore off real quickly when she tries to regulate something, and you're looking at her like, how can you tell us something when you, this is your third DUI? And they get a lot of money for us, but yet we are only working for 12 cents an hour. You can't do anything with 12 cents an hour. You're slave working 40 hours a week, and you're getting 12 cents an hour, 18 bucks a month, maybe 20.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Laura, when were you released from prison?
I was just released September 27th of this year. And let me tell you, even when I went to special housing confinement, I did, after 10 years, Congress says they want you in a halfway house for a year. They would tell me, we don't have to let you go, and we won't. I have over 2,400 program hours and an apprenticeship with the Department of Labor. So you can clearly see that I was productive and I programmed like they wanted me to. But basically, the Federal Bureau of Prisons and the reentry manager, they don't have to let you go to the halfway house. So number one, they said because of my medical issues, they didn't want me there, and because of my institution history. All of my incident reports are with staff. So I would tell the administration, well, adjust poorly to prison. No, I adjusted poorly to the abuse. I said, the official should be asking me, why do I have incident reports with staff members and no peers? I did 14 years, and I literally have never gotten in one peer altercation or one peer fight. It has all been with the officers. I've been abused my whole life.
I'm glad you brought that up, too, because that's what I see happening with a lot of prisoners, too, is that they seem to manage well in the prisons. It's always the staff that provoke, deprive, harass, whatever it may be. These are constant things that are going on. And then they try to make these prisoners, they try to make them go off so that they can say this is why they need to remain in prison. Laura, I am going to say we're running out of time now, but I'd like to know if you would be willing to come back on with us next Tuesday, the same time, and maybe we'll have an update on this.
Oh, I definitely would. I would like to do as much as I can for prison reform, for state and federal prison, and I would just like to shed light using myself to maybe help change the system.
Exactly. We want you to be on this because we are going to get the word out. We are going to get this out and hopefully have everyone stop calling their congressmen, stop calling their senators, their politicians, and demanding that they look into something like this. And I hope that they, hearing your story, will be able to contact you and help you to get through this. And I hope some lawyer will hear this episode so that they can reach out to you too. Is there any way anyone can get in touch with you if they need to?
Yes, they can call me at 785-213-4374, or they can email me at laura.wetzel70@gmail.com.
And that is Laura Wetzel, W-E-T-Z-E-L. Laura, we want to thank you so much for being on with us, and we look forward to next week hearing more about this incident because we know that too many people are dying, too many people are suffering, and the public, they have the wrong idea of what's going on. And we thank you once again. We're going to be shutting down now, and please stay tuned for Laura's next episode next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sister.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, sister. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.